Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
And I love hearing that. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Double Take. 20 years.
20 years.
Whoa. I mean, can anything survive 20 years?
Well, I don't think it's a question of survival. I think it's ingrained in American film history that in 2006, with everything else going on in the world, you had to see The Devil Wears Prada.
And did you see it?
I did see it. I saw it, I think, two or three times, actually.
And I enjoyed it very much.
I enjoyed it. And many people enjoyed it because it is an essential film of American film history. It is a beautiful, beautiful adaptation of a book that was actually opted for film before they even finished the book.
Right, okay.
The whole idea was this was a real person. Meryl Streep's character was a real, real person. Her name is, who was the managing editor of Vogue magazine.
Anna Wintour.
Wintour, thank
right,
you.
Yeah.
And very thinly disguised.
Right.
Very thinly disguised.
Hard not to see it.
They sent spies into Vogue magazine's headquarters and photographed her office just so they'd get it right. That's how thinly disguised it was.
But you don't need Anna Wintour to have Meryl Streep snarky.
No, no. I mean, or Meryl Streep whisper. Meryl Streep and that original.
Sotto voce.
She has said that she based her delivery on Clint Eastwood.
Oh, she is brilliant in Devil Wears Prada 2 is what we're talking about.
We're
today,
of course, talking about the sequel, which could easily have been called The Angel Wears Prada. This is the toned down.
You are
down,
so mean.
Yes, this is the toned down. The claws are sheathed for this one because this is a legacy sequel, folks. This is, and to expand on that term, this is a term film critics know that we talk about in the film industry. A legacy sequel is when you are doing a sequel that doesn't really expand on the original story. This is not Empire Strikes Back or Aliens or Terminator 2. This is a sequel where we are warm and fuzzy about these characters. We want to see them again. So in order for there to be a conflict, we have to start the movie with them no longer in the relationships they were in at the end of the last movie, and then make the movie slowly get us back to where we were in the first one so that we're all warm and fuzzy and comfortable again.
And one of the geniuses of this film, Prada 2, is that you have the same actors.
You have the same cast.
In the major roles.
Yes. All the same. The four biggies are
yeah,
back.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway is
Anne
here.
Hathaway is back as
Stanley
Andy.
Stanley Tucci is about
Stanley
the only
Tucci,
man
oh
in the
my
whole
goodness.
Thing.
Stanley steals this movie. I could watch the movie for nothing but Stanley Tucci's performance.
He is good.
He is, I think, better in this one than he was in the first one.
I think you're right, yeah. Maybe they may have given him a little more to do in this one.
They gave him a more complicated character.
Is he playing Wintour's or Streep's character, Priestley? What is his role?
His role is, I believe, sort of a fashion editor, which is sort of what he was. He was sort of the right hand to Priestley in the original one. And he's, of course, the somewhat kind-hearted, sympathetic person who, in the first film, saves Anne Hathaway's butt by giving her clothing, or at least loaning her clothing from the runway closet to help her dress right and help teach her about fashion, through which we ourselves, the audience, learned about fashion as well. And this is where I'm disappointed in this film, is this film doesn't preach to us the way the first one did. The first one was great because it taught us, there's so many moments when Meryl Streep's character is teaching us about fashion. Probably none better than the moment when she talks to Anne Hathaway's character about that color that she's wearing. And Anne Hathaway just bought this at
oh, no.
and is oblivious to the fact that this color was introduced by this French designer a couple of years ago, appeared first at this Paris fashion show, and she has this wonderful monologue. And what she's really teaching us is that us commoners, we have appropriated high fashion without understanding it.
Oh, yeah.
We are buying high fashion without a clue of its legacy, and well, she is the legacy.
One of the first and best lines of the whole movie is when Stanley Tucci's character says, "Well, look what T.J. Maxx dragged
yes,
in."
Yes, yes. In the sequel, yeah. He says, "Look yes, what T.J. Maxx yeah, dragged in." Friends, and this movie does have a lot of little snarky references to the first film. It was wonderful. I'm sitting in the theater, and I'm surrounded by mostly women watching the film who are obviously all very big fans of the first one. And every time there was a little reference to something in the first film, you heard this cooing throughout the theater of everybody just embracing that moment and paying homage to the first film and making a little fun out of it.
Well, don't you think, or at least my impression was, this was less about fashion this time and more about journalism and corporate takeovers and so on. It was, many of the difficulties that corporations are experiencing today, I thought this one was attempting to attack.
And this is a typical tactic of a legacy film. We're going to see this again with Toy Story 5 when it comes out. If the trailers are any indication, it's about the laptop is replacing the toys for the children. And it's a safe way to dislocate all the characters, give them an obstacle that they have to come back together again for. My opinion is, yes, it wasn't as educational about fashion as the first one was, and I fault it for that, but it's still got $100,000 worth of Coco Chanel and Louis Vuitton and Tiffany, and everybody's wearing it well.
Prominent as Dior is in this one,
mm-hmm.
and that's our Emily Blunt character.
That's our Emily Blunt character. Yeah, and that's quite a tone down, though, from her very edgy look in the first film.
Well, and Dior plays a big part because we realize now how important the advertisers are.
Oh, yes.
For instance, for Vogue.
Oh, yes.
Their edition years ago was like several hundred pages.
It would be. There were times when 90% of a Vogue magazine was advertisement. Yeah. But it was also often the only place you saw advertisements for or Christian Dior or Coco Chanel.
Right.
Because
right.
You're not going to see them during Saturday Night Football.
Right, yeah, there's a very limited place for them. So I think that's yeah. one of the reasons that people might be disappointed this time because there's less the emphasis on fashion.
There's less emphasis, yes, on the fashion element of
yeah,
the story.
Yeah, yes, and more about corporations.
More about the struggle of staying afloat in a digital era, the failure of the printed medium, journalism. And that is where I fault the film, is that in addition to really pulling its punches, because in a legacy sequel, you don't want to scar any of the characters. We're all there because we love these characters, and we're not there to see something bad happen to them. So they really do scale it back in these sequels. But at the same time, I really enjoyed seeing the fashion, everybody wearing these clothes. It was just wonderful. That's one of the reasons you go to this movie, is just to see Anne Hathaway and Emily Blunt wearing $20,000 dresses.
and
Lady Gaga. And don't we spoiled it. Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
Lady Gaga.
Right. I think people know that pretty much. And that's a wonderful piece that they do for her. I really enjoyed that. And as you were describing, one of the small segments that I enjoyed was Stanley Tucci in that closet picking out the clothes.
Yes, yes.
And he was doing it so rapid fire I couldn't even keep up.
With his ring the size of a football. And the signature glasses that Stanley Tucci brought to the set himself in Devil Wears Prada. Most of Stanley Tucci's character was created by himself. He invented that character, whereas the other performers in the film were basically told, this is the character we want. Stanley Tucci was given free rein, and he didn't even sign on until 2 days before shooting started.
Oh, yeah. And who would he be without those round glasses?
Those glasses that make that character. Some actors are able to ad-lib great lines. Harrison Ford, famous for the "I'm making this up as I go along" in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Let's also pay credit to the actors who create with their props, who bring the right set of glasses with them to the set and never take them off.
I noted that in the cast of characters, for instance, at IMDb, Meryl Streep is listed ahead of everybody else and then other characters.
Yes.
So I've rarely
she still
seen
gets
that.
Top billing.
Boy,
oh,
and,
yeah.
But when I watch her, I am enthralled by such a great actress.
She is wonderful in this, but she is not allowed to bare her claws in this one.
And I thought that was partly the point. She's been defanged, by the corporate structure.
Yeah.
By takeovers, we open up with Anne Hathaway's character having mm-hmm. lost her job
yep.
with her buddies. What a way to start the film. It's almost down, except that she's back at Runway Magazine.
Well, we ended the first film with her having gotten the job.
Yes.
You recall, the last scene in Devils was when
wonderful.
She goes off to her journalism job, and Meryl Streep gets in her limo, and she has this little smile on her face because she knew that she has set something into motion. We open with her losing the job. We see Emily Blunt coming back just as snarky as ever, not quite as viciously dressed. To me, Meryl Streep's character was a little bit of a disappointment because I so enjoyed her banter, her edge. She's a vulnerable
character. But I liked that because I thought it was true to what the evolution might have been.
This is art imitating life because, yes. The original person's name, Mentor?
Anna Wintour.
Anna Wintour, gone on to be the content director for Condé Nast. So the job that is being dangled in front of Meryl Streep's character is exactly the fictional version of the job that the real person now has.
And as I say, Streep is so good, and I'm with you. I'm waiting for her bite. It's not quite what it was, but I'm buying it. She has to be aware that if she's even going to have a job, she has to kowtow to people like Dior.
And Streep walks into this role again effortlessly. And she struggled with the first one, though. She actually lost 17 pounds during the filming of the first one, and it was the one and only time that she decided to try method acting in a film. She remained in character offset.
Good.
So throughout the filming, when they were offset, she was still in Priestley's character, so people would approach her. And all of the performers have commented that they never really found their character until they had their first interaction with Streep in character, and they realized, oh, this is what I'm up against.
All right, K.G. Klein, if people want to hear more about what you have to say, and I know you have more to say, they're going to have to go to our website, to WCBE.org, and to the podcast experience. And in this case, since we are cinema classes, it's going to be Double Take. But meanwhile, what do you suggest?
Devil Wears Prada 2. If you're a fan of Devil Wears Prada 1, you're not going to need my poking to go see this.
All right.
It is well worth seeing. Just don't expect it to be as educational and as snarky as the first one.
No, but you will see a very dashing film, and it moves fast, and it's so colorful.
And you still got $100,000 worth of borrowed high culture clothing, and you get Lady Gaga this time.
All right, K.G. Klein, we are talking about Devil Wears Prada 2. I'd like to explore with you other films, and maybe you want to pick up on your legacy film idea, and I'm thinking about fashion.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Now, let me open up with the easier one, all right? I think that Breakfast at Tiffany's is actually a fashion film.
Breakfast at Tiffany's is a film that has the costumes are high fashion.
She influenced.
Yes. She had a huge influence. Hepburn had a huge influence on fashion throughout the 1960s.
And how many dances did you and I go to where where our escorts actually wore black? All black.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes.
She just changed the industry.
She was extremely influential throughout the 1960s and early 70s. The film was not really about fashion.
No, of course it's
but
not.
But, yeah, it's outside of Devil Wears Prada, it's really hard to find a film that is about the fashion industry.
And
there are
right.
some films out there. None of them are great. None of them are really of the same caliber. But then Devil Wears Prada was about this real-life person and the effect this person was
right,
having on
right.
the fashion industry.
It didn't say...
So, yeah, art was simply imitating life in
yeah,
this case.
Yeah, right. It wasn't just a documentary.
No.
I do have one that I know you will have seen, but there's also Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, okay.
1957, Funny Girl.
Funny Girl, yes. Another one was very, very influential.
Yeah, she becomes a model in Paris. She's mm-hmm. a store clerk, and she
yep.
becomes a
she
model.
She becomes a model in Paris.
Yeah.
It has some uneasy moments because the male that she's cast against is about 30 years older than her. But
they do have De Givenchy involved in that funny face. But you were right, and I was researching and thinking we'd have a field day.
No,
we don't.
No, there's a lot of B-level films out there. We had the one about famous Italian family.
Oh,
Gucci.
You know, but
that was a mafia movie more than it was a fashion movie.
I wanted to plunk that in here, and I said, no. But you know, it's not really about fashion.
When I'm thinking about movies recently that really fall in the same vein as Devil Wears Prada, the first one that comes to my mind is the Downton Abbey movies.
Yeah, I thought that was a good choice.
They're set 100
really
years
fashionable.
In the past, but everyone, just like in Devil Wears Prada, everyone is dressed to the T's. They're all driving around in the fanciest, most expensive cars, and they're living this opulent lifestyle. It's the 1920s equivalent of Devil Wears Prada.
2017, there's one I think you will affirm. You may not have thought about it because it's not a runway film, but it is about fashion, and it's called Phantom Thread.
Oh, yeah, Phantom Thread, I remember.
2017.
Yeah, a very dark film. Yes, Daniel Day-Lewis.
And I think the director is Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah.
Who just gave us one battle after another.
Won his Oscar.
Yes.
But the Phantom Thread is a different kind of fashion business. But
yes.
It does relate some of the tension that goes with designing. And
designing and the manufacturing of the clothing, which is something that Devil Wears Prada didn't get into. We don't see anybody making clothes in Devil Wears Prada. We see them mostly talking about the importance of clothes.
Yeah. What about Legally Blonde?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Is that fashion?
Well, there's fashion in Legally Blonde. If we really want to talk about fashion in a movie, we would be very, very bad to ignore Edith Head.
Yeah,
and the
of course.
Great, great gowns that were worn in the 1930s and early 40s, the gowns of Lauren Bacall and Katharine Hepburn, these grand ladies of the 30s who were being dressed by Edith Head and these other wonderful designers. These gowns go on tour, and they're in vaults at the studios.
But that's a while ago, right? Every major movie had Edith Head.
For the
designing.
If you had Lauren Bacall in the movie, you had Edith Head. If you had Katharine Hepburn, you probably had Edith Head. And then in the 1960s and early 70s, you got Bob Mackie.
Ah.
And Mackie took over what Edith Head did and brought it into the much more edgy era of the 60s, 70s with these peacock feathers and extensions. And meanwhile, the women were looking like Twiggy.
I know, my God.
You cannot put Mackie on a lower level than Edith Head, or Edith Head on a lower level than Mackie.
Another one that you mentioned, but it's actually a documentary, and it wasn't a film you mentioned, you just happened to mention, the September issue, was a documentary that came out in 2009, and it was about Anna Wintour. She was the Vogue editor, right?
Yeah.
And an insider's look at the creation of a fashion magazine and the industry's inner workings.
And that came out in 2009?
Yeah.
That was probably in response to The Devil Wears Prada.
Ah.
This is her saying, well, here's my side of the story.
There was another one that came out, Ready to Wear.
Okay.
And that was in 1994. The lives of journalists, designers, and models during Paris Fashion Week. Beyond that, I also have some here that I can't remember well enough. I know you will. Blow Up. Was that?
Yeah, Blow Up, yes.
Yeah. Would you say that's photography more?
Photography more, but yeah, there was some elements of fashion in that. There's elements of fashion in what's the Sharon Stone movie? Paul Verhoeven directed Basic Instinct.
Oh, yeah, good.
You know, all of these movies where you've got a very classy actress doing a very classy role, you're going to have great fashion.
And therefore, you segue right into one in 1975 called Mahogany.
Oh, yes, Mahogany. Yeah. Which had, by the way, the Academy Award-winning song that year. One thing we can't ignore when we're talking to anything, ever talking about Devil Wears Prada is Anna Wintour. When they were making Devil Wears Prada, they were terrified about Wintour's reaction to the film. So many famous designers bowed out, wouldn't allow their fashion to be used in the film, wouldn't sell to the film, wouldn't allow the names to be displayed prominently, because they didn't want to be cut out of Vogue. They didn't want to have their advertisements pulled. They didn't know how she was going to react. And that was why the production had to borrow most of the fashion from people in New York City in order to dress the characters. They had to acquire it in a way that it wasn't going to offend Wintour and possibly have an impact on their ability to advertise. There's one famous segment where they had Meryl Streep dressed in a borrowed gown. They were serving spaghetti for lunch on the set, and she was told she could not eat because they could not allow spaghetti to that dress because it had to be returned to the owner clean.
Well, there was something like that in Devil Wears Prada 2, where the Anne Hathaway character was not allowed to stain.
Yeah, and she stains anyway. Yeah,
she stains anyway.
This is in real life on the set. Meryl Streep was denied lunch because lunch was spaghetti, and she was in this gown. When you read up on the history of the filming of Devil Wears Prada, it's one fascinating anecdote after another.
Yeah, yeah.
This was really a very interesting shoot and a very interesting set. When you have a set that is interesting, you know the movie's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
It can't help but be an interesting movie.
Devil Wears Prada 2 interested me once again in Meryl Streep. And I watched her, the way she moves her face so ever so slightly, but
yes.
Boy, she's just chock full of meaning.
There is a reason why she has two shelves of Academy Awards.
She
does it so effortlessly.
The other one that impressed me, and she has impressed me before, but I'm just beginning to think that she's really not only a great actress, but a beauty, Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt does a nice job with the role that she is given.
Yes.
Just as in the first film, she plays the foil.
Yeah.
To Anne Hathaway's character. And then this one, she is to some extent as well. We have an ending that I could see coming a mile away. I was three quarters of the movie. I bet it ends this way. But I don't fault the movie for that because it's not trying to be that complicated of a story. It's just trying to explore and have fun with these characters. So there are four ways of remaking a movie. They are the sequel, the reboot, the remake, and the legacy film. The sequel, we all are familiar with sequels. Sequels take the story and they expand on it, move it.
Really?
A good example of a sequel would be The Empire Strikes Back or Aliens or Terminator 2. Cameron's a master of sequels.
Yeah.
You're taking the characters, some of them might make it through the sequel. Some, God forbid, some of the original characters might get killed in the sequel. But the sequel continues where the first one left off. Then you have the remake. And this is where you're actually remaking the original film. And there is a ton of Charles Dickens. How many Christmas carols are there? How many Great Expectations? Any Jane Austen? You know, there's a dozen Pride and Prejudices and Sense and Sensibility. You're remaking it, the whole movie. Then you have the reboot. Now, the reboot is when you're taking a movie and you're deciding, we want to create a franchise. We want to make a series of films, but we know we can't hold on to these original casts. They've aged out. They're too expensive. So what we're going to do is bring them in, but we're going to introduce a whole new set of characters, and then this new set of characters are going to continue the story beyond where the original characters leave off. We saw that with the Disney Star Wars movies. We saw that with the recent Ghostbusters movies. That is a reboot. That's where we're restarting with a new cast.
Yeah, right. Okay.
The legacy is the sort of the newer addition to the system. The legacy is, let's say we have a film that was really, really popular, did great at the box office. We don't really have anything new we want to say it, but we know if we bring this cast back together, we're going to sell tickets. But the problem is, if we don't have anything we want to say with this movie, we don't have a story, we can't make a sequel. We don't want to tarnish these original characters either. We don't want to take any risks with them. So we start this movie by having them displaced. They're no longer in the place we left off. And then we spend the movie safely bringing them back to where we left off last time. So there's no progress. There's no forward in the journey. But wasn't it great to see these people back together? And that is Devil Wears Prada 2.
Okay.
That is Maverick. There is no reason for Maverick to exist except we wanted to have those characters
back
together.
But explain to me again why Maverick can't be considered a sequel.
Because Maverick doesn't take the characters and grow them. Maverick takes the characters and brings them back to where they were. So at the start of Maverick, he's no longer the hotshot fighter pilot.
Right.
Val Kilmer is now a aging and very sick in real life admiral.
Right.
The other characters have gone their own way. But in order for us to feel warm and fuzzy about this, we've got to end the film with them back together again. The legacy film is the opposite of the sequel. The sequel discards the original characters and moves on with the story, or keeps the original characters and moves on with the story.
Right.
Whereas the legacy film keeps the original characters because they are the story. The story is secondary to the idea of let's just bring these people back together again and end the film not having really made any progress.
So you could have called Devil Wears Prada 2 a sequel, but you see it much more as a legacy.
I see it much more as a legacy film. It falls in with Maverick. It falls in with other films where the whole idea is to bring the original cast back together and have us at the end basically where we left off with the first film.
All right, K.G. Klein, the movie is The Devil Wears Prada 2. What do you recommend?
Oh, go see it. It's fun. It may not be as good as the original, but it's actually better than most of the legacy films.
And I found it engaging.
Yeah.
I found it visually exciting. And the actors are superb.
It's so much fun to see them back together.
Yes.
The chemistry is still there. And gosh, Stanley Tucci does such a good job.